a kid grows up to be an adult, and then they're interested in stories because life is short, and you have this very creative gift, but you were always like this. You know, as I'm rummaging through these papers and pictures and all kinds of things and all your stories that you wrote even in grade school, they're all about mystery and adventure and others. You're living what you have always lived. It's just deeper now that you're growing up.
Welcome to Your Mom.
Your Mom Podcast.
Your Mom's Podcast.
This isn't any podcast. This is your mother's podcast.
My mom's podcast.
Nah, dude, she's your mom.
With Ashley Addison and Lisa McCaffrey.
Your mom is a podcast.
Shut up, dude.
Welcome to Your Mom on the Road, special LA edition.
Let's make it a normal, normal episode.
Let's make it a normal. Let's just, this is going to be part of a reoccurring series that we're just starting. Yogi Roth, the one and only, welcome to Your Mom. And I should just set the scene really quickly here. We are at our dear friend Kim's house in LA the day before Mother's Day. And we'll get into exactly why we're having this conversation right now. But I want to start with, you've had me on like 17 of your podcasts. And this is the first time I've been able to welcome you to my podcast. So this is like a really good moment for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, we always know who can show up when you need a guest in a pinch. You've done that for me many times.
Yeah. You're like, hey, no, my guest fell through. You want to come on the pod?
Hey, you do things for one another, right?
We do.
But I am so excited for you.
Thank you.
I know we're recording this around Mother's Day. I got to listen to you and your mom at the Eiffel Tower, right? It's not LA, but wow, that was amazing to hear, because I think both of us would say we know each other as well as we think we know someone, mm-hmm. at least over the last decade plus.
Yep.
And it's just not true. Like, there's so many things to unearth. There's always a new angle. You do this as a storyteller. You can interview the same person 100 times and find something new about them. And I got to like learn a lot about you. And
yeah.
Your mom.
Is there anything that surprised you?
I mean, I laughed a lot.
Okay. You kind of probably understood me. Lisa said this. She's like, I understand you more, having like listened to your mom and seen.
Well, I think the greatest trait that I would say of you is that like you really like live with empathy. Like that's a first principle for you, or like that's a skill that's like front loaded. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, I should have empathy about that person. Like, you live that way. And then to see and hear your mom and the sacrifices she made and the decisions, you kind of saw it as it was happening. It's probably made more and more sense as life has gone on. And of course, after that conversation, mm-hmm. but I was like, damn, like Ashley really does see the good, and you take a pause before you judge. And I think you get that from your entire upbringing. And that's what I took away from that conversation.
You know what? I should have had you on this podcast a long time ago. Like, okay, what? Tell me what
in
else.
LA, no. In LA, we got you.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. And I will say thank you because you have been a huge supporter of what Lisa and I are doing here since day one, like truly for the last 11 years. For those of you that don't know, Yogi is a colleague of mine at Pac-12. We helped launch that thing almost 11 years ago, which is crazy. There's
that.
A really bad YouTube video if you want to go find it online. But I just think about it every stage you've helped. You are someone who has a growth mindset. And so when I came to talk to you about this idea, you've been so encouraging and helpful and given me so much advice. And I will just say, do you remember about maybe 6 months ago, you sent Lisa and I a text? Do you remember what it said?
I remember the concept around the text.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the exact verbiage.
Well, I remember it was one of, and we get a lot of feedback on the show and we hear from different people about what resonates with them, which is interesting because things that resonate with me that moms say isn't necessarily what resonates with people, other people. But you texted Lisa and I, and it was this moment that I was like, oh, we really have something here. And I have heard from other people who have said a similar line, which is you basically told us being able to listen to you guys and have these conversations, I feel like I get to be with my mom. Yeah. There is like a, and you lost your mom 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're going to talk about her. That's what this whole show is going to be about, is honoring your mom. But I remember it like hit me. I still remember the feeling I had when I saw it. I was like, there couldn't be a kinder compliment or something that it felt really real. And what I realized, and the reason why I want to have this conversation right now this weekend, is we spent the last year talking about moms and celebrating motherhood, and also the culmination of Mother's Day and all the content that we're putting out. And what is not lost on me is that Mother's Day for me is it's one of my favorite days of the year, right? Like I get to connect with my other mom friends. I get to have a little alone time. I get to sleep in but it's not that way for everybody. And Mother's Day represents, I think, there's a lot of layers to it and pain and loss and people who have either lost their mothers or perhaps don't have a good relationship with their mom. I think this day represents a lot more. So I wanted to acknowledge that through a conversation with you and honoring your mom, who was this amazing woman. And you talk about the conversation that I had with my mom. You recorded a podcast with her back in 2016. Was it your very first podcast on your show?
Very first podcast, yeah.
I want to bring her in right here and see how this thing works. Mom, you there?
I'm here.
Oh, nice. So welcome to the podcast. This is the first interview I've ever done on this thing.
All right. I'm glad I'm honored to be a part of this.
How's it sound?
First
sound
things
right?
are always the most important things, you know.
What gave you the idea to do, like, what was the impetus for having your mom as your first guest?
Yeah, it was really clear. So I made this documentary called Life in a Walk about mm-hmm. my dad. And I remember, and I wonder, like, what you think about this in the last year you've done these conversations. Like, daughters and moms have a relationship. We heard that with you and your mom. Sons and dads have relationship. Sons and daughters, moms and dads. Like, they're not the same.
Right.
And I made this film about my dad. And I remember, like, yesterday, them watching and sitting beside me. We rented out a theater in Hollywood for just us. Like, they flew into LA and we were premiering it that night. And I was like, you're going to land and watch it. And it was, I never sweat more other than when like I was shopping for wedding rings. Never in my life. Like, or engagement rings, I guess you'd say. And I watched them watch it. And I was sitting next to my dad and my mom was one seat over. And I saw both of them like tearing up as it's going on. And she goes, it's a beautiful tribute to your father and your relationship. And the movie did really well. And afterwards, I was like, I got to do something with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was launching this next concept for Yogi, right? And it was a podcast. And I was like, it just makes sense to interview her. And she's always had great depth. She always has great depth. And I was like, I need to capture it. Much like for my dad, I did it selfishly for me, mm-hmm. but really for my kids and their kids. And we were talking about this the other night, like after two generations, like who knows if you're even an idea anymore.
Exactly.
Or memory.
No one knows
it's recorded.
Capture it and record it. So that was in March of 2016. And it's a beautiful conversation. And Deborah Roth is your
Devorah.
Devorah.
Yeah.
Devorah.
Yeah.
And Devo is what yeah, Devo you is what Devo.
Yeah.
I was listening to it last night and this morning, because I didn't know you did it. When we were chatting, you said, yeah, I recorded a podcast with mom. I'm like, how have I never listened to this? Have you listened to it since she passed away?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So in the Jewish tradition, there's this candle. It's called the Yahrzeit candle. Familiar? Yeah. So for those that may not, that are watching or listening, it's this little candle that burns for 24 hours. So any high holiday, any day that is monumental, could be Mother's Day, birthday, day they passed away, or a holiday, you light this candle and you kind of, at least my understanding of it, like you say a prayer around it. And what I love most about it, like you could see it with your kids, you light a candle, they could just stare at it. Like it slows down time. And every time I do that, whether it's for my mom or other people that have passed away, we do it in our house now, whether it's my wife's dad or whatever, you really talk to it. Like, and I do. So I'll sit there late at night when everybody goes to bed and the candle will be lit and our kids will see it and we'll do a little spiel around it. And I go up to it. And I did it once with my wife next to me, and it was way different than like when I did it alone. And I love doing it alone. And you just kind of get there, and it brings you, it brings like a tidal wave. So here's a story for you. Ever since my mom died, I really believe in signs, and so did she. So every time I see a star at night, which I do every night for the most part in LA, take the dog out, whatever, I look up. First one I see, I say, hey mom, how you doing? I say a little prayer. And we have a hummingbird in our front yard that whenever it comes through, I stop. And I say, oh, there she is. And even so much Zane, our oldest, would be like, that's Nana. That's what they called her. And that's great. But that's just like a brief moment. It's not an emotional moment. It's just kind of like an acknowledgement, right? Kind of like that movie, I think it's Coco or Coca. Like, you know the movie where like if you don't talk about somebody then who passes away, you just kind of forget about them?
Yes.
So we're always talking to her. And that is super intentional. But when it comes to the Yahrzeit candle, when you look at that flame, it's like a real talk. It's like mom and dad talk, you know, or like mother, daughter, father, son, whatever, like one of those heavy duty. And it's the greatest, Ash. Like, I am always bawling. I'm always letting something out. I'm always getting a response. So I'll do that on Mother's Day too, for sure.
You've had two Mother's Days since she's passed away. Sense, so what is Mother's Day like for you? Because then we're going to talk about Amy, your amazing wife. You do have this like incredible woman who is a mother in your life for you honor. And it's about her certainly. But the first Mother's Day after she passed away, what was that? What was that holiday like for you?
It wasn't a big deal. Mm. It's more around like the day she died or like her birthday. So her birthday is really unique in our house. You reference Amy, my wife. My mom and Zane, who's our oldest, have the same birthday, March 13th. My dad and Amy's mom have the same birthday. Mm. Amy and I are 4 days apart. So like there's like this connection that was always going to happen. Like somebody had that idea and decided to have people born on that specific day. So it's more on like those days. And what I think about is like my dad on those days. He to this day can tell you the exact number of days that she's been gone. And like on one hand, it's beautiful. And on the other hand, it's guttural. Like it's beautiful because they had 50 plus years together. Oh my God, how lucky could we be? You and Chris, Amy and I, 50 plus years. Oh my gosh, could you even imagine what a world that would be? How lucky it would be. And then you're like, well, and then that person leaves. Like you don't even know how to operate. And so that's where I go a lot. And then I'll kind of work through those relationships and then I'll get to myself. And like, there's always a hole, I think, for each of her children that's very different. For me, it's always been, she always asked the best question, right? And it could be a sentence. It could be a reaction. It could be like, she got right to, no BS. Like people call her Devo because she was like, no bullshit. Like none at all. She could tell if you walked in the room, she'd be like, hey, so what happened with you and your mom? Or like she could just tell. Yeah. I mean, she worked with people in recovery. She was a therapist forever. She's an art therapist, worked with kids who were abused. Like she could read the room like nobody's business. So like I miss that because that's like a hard thing to replace. Let alone mom, which is hard to replace.
Right, right. Can we talk about her story? Because her life, and I will link to the interview that you did with her in your podcast because everyone should go listen to that. It's fascinating. And I knew the story and knew some of the stories, but to hear her share it in her words, and again, the first time I'm listening to this, knowing you as I do and knowing that, you know, she passed away 2.5 years ago, it's an incredible list to listen to. And I wonder, well, let's start with share what her life was, because her upbringing, her parents, like it's a, really, if you could do a movie again, you'd go. Yeah.
Well, I'll start at the end for you because you're the first person I talked to when she died.
Yeah.
Oh. Which I didn't dawn on me till now. Like I can remember it like yesterday. I mean, that morning I woke up and my mom, again, she believed in signs. And in the Jewish tradition, like you don't go until you see your parents in a dream or in visualization or hallucinization or whatever. And that night, and we kept asking her, like, have you seen your parents? Have you seen your parents? And she was like, she had lung cancer and she was the ultimate, like, screw the system. So she would never, she wasn't into chemo. She wasn't into any of that. She was like, no, I'm going to beat it with my mind. Like, and that's how she was. That's how we were raised. Like my brother Ravi tells this joke where you're like, you're sick. Like if you're like, mom, I don't feel good. She'd take her hand, put it on your forehead and be like, no, you're good. Like you could have 105 degree feet. Like it wouldn't matter. Like it was like mental resiliency at its finest,
God, I love
which
that.
The traumas exist in all of us due to that. Uh-huh. But when she was sick, I remember she called us because the same day that we found out we were having Makai and he was a boy was the same day she told us she had cancer and it was Christmas Eve. I'll never forget it. So it was Christmas Eve 4 years ago. And she's like, I'm going to be good. Don't worry about it. Mom was a smoker. So to anybody listening, like stop, quit. Like it will get you at some point. Mm-hmm. And you just saw the steady decline. Every week, twice a week, she would get fluid pulled out of her lungs. And she'd go and she'd get it out and it would be like vials, like felt like buckets. But she'd come and she'd feel like $1 million. Then she'd do acupuncture. She's like, I'm good. I'm doing the natural thing, you know? Anyway.
Did you ever try to convince her to do more
than that? No, I would never try to convince anybody to do that. I lean probably her way for sure. Mm-hmm. I would want to do that at that stage of my life, I think. But who knows? And then B, like you don't want to, I don't think it's kind of like what you do. You don't want to be combative. Like, it's okay to, there's a way to ask questions. Hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And once she decided to go natural, like, I threw down. So I was calling every naturopath in LA or overseas or whatever. And we were just getting, like, we were shipping boxes of like herbal medicine, like teas. Amy's mom is literally in her backyard, like making tea from all these different herbs from Korea. Like, it was all hands on deck to support that path. Yeah. Anyway, the night before she dies, I wake up in the middle of the night and I had a dream. And then I saw her and her parents. And I'll never forget this. I wish like my wife recorded it, but I FaceTimed my mom that morning and I was like, hey, I saw them. Like, and we'll get to their story to answer your question. You're good. And I had thankfully in the pandemic been able to go home a lot because we weren't working. You and I were both furloughed. Like, we didn't have anything to do other than a daily podcast, supposedly, that we were doing every day, which was fine and grateful for that. But we had time. Mm-hmm. So, and we had a newborn and I was flying back as often as I could. And you just saw the decline from, she was probably always 115 pounds. And then she became like 90, 80. And it was just like, you knew it was kind of coming to an end. And I can remember calling her and telling her that. And she just kind of looked at me. She couldn't really talk. She was kind of like mumble and nod. And she's like, yeah, thank you. Like, I'm good. And then that afternoon, my dad called me and he goes, Yoga, I think she's gone. And I remember like her, I was like, what do you mean think she's gone? Is she not? What are you talking about, dude? Like, no, I think she took. And like, that's my dad is like kind of soft like that, like in those moments. And I was like, well, call me when somebody confirms it because she's fighting through this. Mm-hmm. And like, I wouldn't even agree, which you go to grief therapy or the principles, like what denial is one of the initial ones. So anyway, long story short, like she saw her parents. I saw her parents and kind of, I remember at least telling her that, and at least in my own brain, that gave me the peace of mind to be like, hey, like you're good. And I bet she was like, thanks, I'm good.
The fact that she passed away hours after that conversation, of course, that was totally the thing that allowed her to, you know, she had her parents were waiting there for her.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember pulling away because my thing was like, when I found out she had cancer, we were living right across the street from the ocean. So I just went and I just like wept and like went to the ocean. Yeah. And that's where I would always talk to her. She loved the beach. When she'd come to LA or whatever, when she was pregnant with me, she said like, I was crazy at the ocean. You know, I'm obsessed with the sea and the sand and everything to do with it. So I just drove to the ocean. And my wife was working and like the, you know, the pleaser in me was like, don't bother her. She's in like a big meeting. So I just got in the car and I think we were supposed to do like in a, like a podcast together or something, yeah, something. And I was like, hey, and I remember just like getting choked up being like, and you got it. And you were like, love you, like here for you. It was brief obviously, but, yeah, I remember driving. I remember exactly where I parked when we talked. And then I walked out to the beach and just spent time by myself.
Yeah. I remember that whole time. And it was a pretty intense time. It was an intense time in the world. It was COVID. We didn't know if we were going to have jobs. We didn't know what the future was. We didn't know. Makai was how old?
He was months old, July, I mean, to October.
So. So you had like a newborn.
Yeah.
And I remember when you told me your mom was sick. And again, for people who are as close as we are, because we work so much together and we talk on the phone every day for work and all these things, that I just remember it was kind of a side to you that I hadn't seen. And I, to be honest with you, I really worried about you because I didn't know how much you had like wanted to talk about it, didn't want to talk about it. I think that's one of the really hard things around grief is that everybody manages it differently, especially when they're going through something like that. And so I never knew, like, do you want to talk about your mom? Yeah. Do you not want to talk about your mom? Like, I felt like you'd let me know if you wanted to, but also maybe that wasn't the answer. So I remember feeling awful about like, how can I help support you? Do you even need any support? You've got what, you know, and I will never forget after she, when you told me that she passed away and after she passed away, I felt for some reason, because of all the stories that you had told me about her, and I felt like I knew, you know, your family and your dad, I felt this like connection to her and everything that she, and we'll talk about what she stood for and some of the principles that she instilled in you, and that she was about in her life. But I remember it so poignantly, and I've never told you this, but I was really worried about you, and I was worried about you after she passed away because you didn't really take any time off of work. Yeah. And it was because it was an intense time, right? Like there was so much that you were like, I can't not go to this meeting or do this presentation. There was something that was, there was some big thing that was happening right after your mom passed away that you were like, I'm doing this. And I was like, you don't need to do this. I don't even remember what it was.
We were teaching a class.
Yes, that's right.
We were teaching a class. It was a Wednesday night class. And she died on a Tuesday.
That's exactly right.
And you're like, dude, you don't do this class. And yeah. I was like, of course I don't need this class that we're not getting paid for. We're just enjoying, like, it's an offering to the to our community. But I was like, no, I need to do this class. And to answer your question of who she was is what I told the class.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you the story that I told the class for the listeners. The last time I was with her physically, I went to her room. And I had been writing her series of notes, which I still have, like on my computer. When I'm flying, I'll write her a note. You know, I just need to write. You know how I am. Like I got, that's how I get it. That's how I express.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll bottle it up, but if I could write it out, yeah. I can get it out. And I said, hey, let me help you. And she was changing the sheets on her bed. And God, this is a great story. And she goes, I got it. And she was taking the sheets off and then putting the sheets on. And I was like, Mom, let me help you. She goes, no, Yogi. There's one thing I can do this. It's like, okay, a sheet's like 10 pounds, maybe, you know, all bundled up. So she does. She takes them off. She stops. And she's like wheezing. Like this is like a tiny, frail, cancer-ridden human being. And she pauses and she goes, do you know why I love sheets so much? And I said, no idea, but let me help you put the new ones on. She goes, don't touch them. She's putting them on. She tells me the story. She goes, when I moved to America, my mom moved to America when she was 8. She had nothing. She was born in Israel, raised in a refugee camp in Poland, and it was basically on a wait list to get out. For those who don't know what a refugee camp is, imagine like a big plot of land and people living in tents, huts, whatever. And then like they had nothing. Like imagine like literal nothing. This is post-Holocaust. Like
and her parents were both Holocaust survivors.
Her parents were both Holocaust survivors, which is in and of itself a different, totally different planet story. But they talked about, she talked about it. She's putting sheets on the bed. She said, when we moved to America, we had nothing. And the first place I slept was in the drawer of a dresser. She's 8, right? So you want those big, huge dressers. She slept in the drawer of it all crumpled up. And she goes, we didn't have any sheets. So you know what? I slept on it. Imagine her putting one sheet on, taking a breath, trying to get some oxygen. I slept on newspaper. Puts another sheet on. I'm like, oh, you slept on newspaper? She goes, yeah, we didn't have any money for sheets. So I'd lay the newspaper down every day and then I put it over myself every night. And I vowed to myself that I'm going to do enough in my life that I'm always going to have great sheets. And she said, for you, Yogi, I want you to take away that, like, don't feel bad for me. And I'd say the same to the listener here. Don't feel bad that you didn't have sheets, but appreciate the sheets that you have.
Yeah.
And I just felt like that was so poignant. And I told that to the class in a very raw state of, you know, shock, grief, whatever. But it was a beautiful illustration of, like you, like she saw the beauty in the world. She's tough. She wasn't going to take any shit. She was going to stand up for what she felt was right. Her kids were going to do the same thing. You weren't going to miss out on an opportunity because you lived in America. You weren't living somewhere that didn't have those opportunities. But she wasn't going to ever forget what she came from, where she came from, and also where she was going. And when she got there, the appreciation around it. And that was like the toughness, the resilience, like all the things.
As she's like the scene of that, of her putting these sheets on and telling you that, it's.
I haven't thought of that story in a long time.
I forgot that story until you started telling it. And now it's all coming. I remember it so poignantly. And the class was feeling exactly like I'm feeling right now, which is just you're picturing it in your head. And it's like, it was a moment. And how could you? There's not a better way that you could actually illustrate what she's talking about as she's doing it. And you're watching your mom do this, she's not letting you help her.
Yeah. Yeah. It was beautiful. Like you know, her parents are both Holocaust survivors and went through hell. Like her mom had to change her identity when she was 12 years old. She came up from school. Her whole family was murdered, axed to death in the Holocaust. She went on the run and had to basically pretend she wasn't Jewish forever. Living in farmhouse after farmhouse, like getting frostbite, just like living a life we can't even fathom. Yeah. As a female, let alone like a human, like a 12-year-old girl. Like, come on now, what are we talking about? And my mom's father at 19, at least in his eyes, he was playing like professional soccer in Europe, came home one day and the Holocaust started and got put on a train and got taken to the concentration camps, just like you hear in the movies. Take a shower, is it water, is it gas? Is it water, is it gas? One day led out to dig his own grave. And in the moment, he's like, screw this. I'm not going out like this. And he takes off and he gets shot 8 times in his upper left shoulder, lies on the ground for 2 days, picks himself up and walks his way to a home, knocks on the door. Who knows what the religion of that woman was, but she probably wasn't Jewish, but she didn't ask what he was. She just took care of him. And I say that because that was like what was embedded in on my mom and her brother of like, do you take care of people? Like you never know, you know, like it doesn't matter color, religious affiliation. Now here we are, politics. Like it, like if somebody needs you, like, because if you don't do it, who will? And that was always a line.
She told that story on your podcast about the painter that her dad, was it her dad that hired this painter who didn't have a leg or an art, like there was something that was, and he looked at your mom and said, if I don't hire him, who will?
Yeah, totally. When my mom moved to America, you know, then they get, you figure out a life.
Yeah.
Right. So if anybody who's an immigrant or refugee, you understand this story, you go find your community, usually from that same background, you build a life. And he was like, well, it's America. It's the greatest place in the world. At that era, everybody thought that. So he started a convenience mart. I could see it like it was yesterday, a big orange sign. I'd go there, run around the aisles as a kid. But he ended up going bankrupt because he kept giving everything away to all the homeless people, everybody in town. You need this? Yep, get me back later. Get me back later. And he hired somebody as a painter, kind of somebody to like fix things at the store, who had one arm and one leg. And my mom would go up to him as a young child and be like, why'd you hire him? And he would say what you just referenced, which is, well, if I don't do it, who will?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think that that eventually, like she was so tough. Like I remember being a kid and being like, oh my God, like my mom is so tough. Like
strict or like
strict,
you
tough, loud.
Yeah.
And then you go to Israel and you're like, like Israelis are loud, you know, like they're strict, they're tough. But as a child in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, like you don't think that way. And then you see other moms that are like more loving or more gifting or more just different. And you don't realize that like underneath that is crazy compassion. And I can remember seeing that as a child because she didn't work when we were young. And then she went back and got her master's. She went to night school in art therapy. So art therapy is basically like have your kids draw something at home. And if they don't draw a front door, they don't want to let people in. It's like a basic fundamental exercise, right? Or if they draw mom really big or dad really big and themselves really small, like there's a confidence issue or God forbid worse. So she would say, why am I so tough? Are you like this kid who is just sexually abused, physically abused, mentally abused in a foster home? Like your life's pretty good, dude. I'm not tough. Like if anything, I'm just reasonable. Like you're not tough enough. Like it's kind of like what you interpreted. And it helped because I think all of her kids are really, I don't want to sound like boastful, but I think our emotional intelligence is really high. Yeah.
Well,
it's because of that.
I think, and I want to, you know, your sister and your brother are incredible, of course. And I remember Ravi, your brother, who is
the funner version
the
of me.
Best. Yeah, I did say that. I felt like that's always was like not a nice thing that I said to
it's
you.
True.
But it's if I'm going to be a truth teller, which you always tell me is really important, like Ravi is like the fun version of Yogi. More fun version because you are very fun. Yeah. He is like on another, he's the more fun version of humanity. Yeah, like he represents, give him a Ravi around the world. My favorite follow, like the only reason I'm still on Instagram basically. But he posted this beautiful tribute to her after she passed away. And I remember I've read everything that he wrote cause he wrote a few different things. And it was again, the side of him that again, I don't know Ravi well, but I was so taken with how, like who your mom was. So when you say that you don't want to be boastful, like of course you guys are through her from her, like you are your mom. When you think about her traits, like what do you think you are most like her in?
Probably intense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know I'm intense. You know, I try to be chill, but like I'm intense like her. I think like she told us this at our wedding in Bali. She gave a speech that I have still, and it's so beautiful. And the last line she said, if you bring the sacred into the everyday becomes sacred, which is like in our home, kind of a foundational principle of our marriage and our house. And I think that's true. Like, I think I didn't see her do that, but she did that. And then I think lastly, like she's a fighter. Like I can remember, and I think a lot of adults, I don't know, may be able to relate. I remember being like 11 years old, sitting on our steps, holding onto the rail. and my parents are in an argument, and finally I like yell like stop or something, and I had this wall in my bedroom, and there was one hollow spot, you know, like old school houses, and I had a picture of like Allen Iverson or something covering it, but behind it I could like punch it and it would like be like dead, you know, so like you could like punch a hole kind of, but not really like destroy the wall. And I remember that's like where I would go, and I was mad, and after I yelled, she like didn't, she realized I wasn't asleep, and she came up and I was like, are you gonna get a divorce? And she looks at me, and I'm not judging anybody here, but she looks at me and she goes, Yogi, no, people don't have to agree on everything, but we're gonna fight, and you fight through it. I embedded that. Yeah. Like if you ask my wife why she loves me so much, she'd say he's a fighter. And I am. Like now I'm also like a commitment phobe up until when I met Amy. Like there's a lot of other issues that I had because I was like, I don't want to fight unless it's like what I think I want to really fight for. I'd say that as a professional. I'd say that as a friend. I get that from her. And that might make people uncomfortable. That's happened before, whether it's with colleagues or maybe it's happened with you and I don't know, where it's like, probably not because you're always so prepared, but like I have a standard and I'll fight for it. So I think that's probably the three things that I'd take away. And then I'm the antonym of a lot of things too, I think. Children like you, like my love, one of my two love languages is touch. I don't remember ever really being like held as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that's my own issues of like, I need that, you know? I'm like, Amy, hold my hand.
Yeah. You know, I get that. No, I totally do. What's your other love language?
Affirmations.
Yeah.
I think that's like the athlete in me of like, I need a coach to say like, nice route.
Yeah.
Or like bad route, like whatever. Like I need feedback in that way.
I think every man I know, that's one of the love languages. Yeah. It's true for everybody too. I mean, we all need that on some level, but what did you learn about her? I think one of the interesting things when you lose somebody and you're going through that grieving process, and I felt this way when I lost my grandmother, you know her so well. She was your mom, you knew it, but you learn things about somebody after they pass away because all these stories come back and there's people that you read stuff and you go through her things. Was there anything that you learned about her or a story or something that, you know, you didn't know until she passed away or was she was going through that?
Yeah. Two things that jump right out. I didn't realize like how in love my parents were. Like we would sit at home right after she died. Everybody, of course, you go home, you know, and my wife is amazing. We had a newborn, like it was hard.
Yeah.
And she would like take care of it. And then the kids, my siblings and I and my dad, we would sit downstairs and we'd all kind of take turns going through it. But to hear my dad cry like that, like I didn't think it was possible.
Like, I remember you telling me that, calling me after one time. You said, I saw my dad cry in a way that I didn't know was physically possible.
I saw him cry twice in his whole life, right? Twice. And I know exactly what those moments were.
Yeah.
And this was just like, it was heartbreak, you know? And I would cry like that. Like I remember feeling in my chest, like what is the tearing happening? You felt it with your grandmother. Like what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then you add in 50 years and then all the stories. And every night it was like a wail. And I think when we left, you're thinking like, what is every night? And it probably was a lot of that, at least for a year for him. So hearing about like how connected they were, I mean, they met at 17 on a blind date and she was a badass. And at 18, she's like, I'm going to Israel to fight in the war. And he's like, I'm even more in love, you know? And
hook, line and sinker.
Yeah. Even rap. And they didn't have kids. So they were in their like 30s. So like, they kind of like lived life, hitchhiked all throughout Europe, like didn't have any money, but figured it out, like figured out how to go to postgraduate school and get master's degrees and all those things. And we're just sit up all night. I'd imagine like smoking cigarettes or smoking a joint and waxing on philosophy because they love that. So I think that was like, wow. And like, it's a great point. Like we never know how deep anybody's relationship is. Even if it doesn't look like, here I was screaming as an 11-year-old thinking that my parents hated each other, you know, or even like they were just loud. And there were probably really tenuous moments.
There always are.
Yeah. So that was the first one. The next one is a phrase that I've really adopted, which is in Hebrew, it's tikkun olam, which means, and we need to talk about you in a second here, but it means repair the world. And she, in her last stage of life, last 15, 20 years, she worked in a drug and alcohol rehab center. And she was a badass, a hard ass, but she told you to tell you straight. And she had this phrase that she would put up on the wall. She would have everybody do art and all those things throughout the facility. And they all fall in love with her. And the coolest part about her dying was a lot of the people in recovery came home, came to our house and were like, you don't know me, but my name is so-and-so. You don't know me, but my name is so-and-so. And the idea of like, when you are at your lowest, do you feel like you can still repair the world? Because you're going to be quote unquote repaired. You're going to be healed. And that's what the work she would do in art therapy, in different sessions. And then you get out of that rehab center and you're like, you have something to hang on to.
Yeah.
And the last thing I did with her before she died was I showed her this short film that I was making called All American Stories. It was like a series of short docs. She watched a rough cut of one of them and she looked at me and then she couldn't get much out, but she said, you're doing it. She goes, you're repairing the world. That's exactly what Tikkun Olam is. And of course I'm like bawling and I was like, yeah, you know, I'm trying, you know, and she's like, just keep doing that. Like, you're great at that. Like, keep telling those stories, like whether it's in a game or whether it's in a show or whether it's with your future kids. And it was beautiful. And, you know, what's interesting about all that is like, she dies and you go into like, I don't know, everybody does their own thing, but I crashed. I can remember coming home one night from a show we had in the pandemic because eventually the season started and I swear my mom died before football on purpose. She's like, I'll do it before the season so you don't have to miss a weekend of work, right? She loved football. We called her coach and she'd watch everything. She'd watch you. She'd watch the whole crew. She'd have opinions on socks, outfits, mm-hmm, ties, commentary. Mm-hmm. She loved Nigel. She loved Nigel. Oh my God. She loved him, watching him. And that's what we were doing. We were doing the nightly show that year because we weren't on the road. And I remember I came home from a night and it was just the lowest I'd ever felt. And it was her passing, of course. There was a lot of other stuff. Bought a house, he had a baby. Like I said, a lot of challenging things going on. And I went to our bedroom and I remember just falling on my knees. And I have no problem telling this. I'm not embarrassed by it. And I was losing it. And I looked at my wife and I was like, I don't have an answer. Like, I don't have a tool. My life's been pretty easy. Like, I've fought for stuff. Like, I'm not, mm-hmm, I'm competing and, you know, whatever. Like, there's some cool inspirational stories here and there, but like, I haven't had to deal with a lot of tragedy, trauma, if you will. And it felt like it all happened in like a month. Yeah. Like, everything I never thought would happen to me happened. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I was like, oh, that like mental health thing that you champion all the time, like, you kind of live in this now, bro. Let's find an answer. And I called up a guy you had on the show, Mike Gervais, who's a good friend. And I said, hey, I need help. Like, I need help like yesterday. Who can I talk to? And he connected me with this brilliant family therapist who was USC's first ever sports psychologist in the 80s.
Oh.
And her conversations like brought me back to life.
Wow. I was thinking about one of the things that when I was listening to your mom's interview that you did with her, which again, I'd love to hear what the experience is like of being able to go back and listen to that after she's not here. But one of the things that you asked her that like, I literally paused it before I even heard the answer and was like, man, you said, what was it like when you lost your parents? Cause they, I think they died pretty close. You were in college, I think at the time. And her explanation of her dad died of cancer and went very quickly. And she said that was so sad, but the hardest part was watching my mom fall apart after her husband died, after my dad died. And she goes through and talks about, you know, that experience. And I just thought, I was sitting there, I'm literally listening to it this morning, like, what a poignant question to ask your parent who then, you know, 5 years later, you're going through this really real thing. And you talk about your dad and how in love they were. And I'm just like, how is your dad doing now? Yeah. Because I think that when you lose somebody who is, you hear about these stories all the time, when there's a couple that's been together for so long and one of them dies, it's usually not too long until the other one also passes away. You've heard all of these different stories. So I saw your dad recently and he's at the Rose Bowl, I think, right? He seemed great, yeah. Like as great as you possibly could be. And I would love for you to talk about how he's doing now. And also this tradition that I think I want to adopt in my family is that you guys take a trip, just the three of you, the siblings and your dad now every year.
Yeah.
And did you do that before? No. Sure. Okay. So how is your dad doing? And tell us about like how the kind of how that trip came to be.
Yeah. You know, this is really cool. Like, I appreciate you having me talk about this stuff because I don't think I do it enough. You know,
you're like always the one asking the questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it like make it feels really good.
Yeah.
Good. You know, I feel really full. Like, and I hope like on Mother's Day or whatever, we adopted a tradition after we did Life in a Walk, which is at dinner with your family, you have to ask only questions you don't know the answer to. And everybody call it a room of six. You're going to get six different questions. You can't ask the same person twice, but it lasts for hours. Wow. I have a record on my phone, the last real family meal we had with my mom, where we did the same game. I say that of like, how's my dad doing? The blessing and the curse of him is, it's in my opinion, he's the most well-read human I've ever met. Reads five newspapers a day. I feel like he knows everything in like a really humble way. Like he could debate everything and you never feel like a debate. Like he's really aware, I think. And he started as a family therapist and a marriage counselor. And then we had no money and he taught himself how to be a stockbroker. And then did that for 17 years. Then retired when I was like freshman in college. I guess he did well. I don't even know. Like nothing changed.
Yeah.
And then became an EMT and then became a professor.
Wow.
And then became a yoga teacher. Like now he delivers meals on wheels. Like my point is that like he was always engaged. Like his mind is really sharp. And the hardest part to watch was when you're around somebody who has answers to the test, like he knows grief inside and out. Inside and out, backwards and forwards. This is what he did for a living. Like he can reference Adlerian psychology and you can go up and down. He had no problem in any conversation around mental space, mental skills, grief, family dynamics, you name it. I mean, it's awesome now as an adult with kids because we could talk about it. Like we've crossed that bridge of like, I don't feel judged anymore as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, which is like, it took a while, but how is he doing? Well, at first he was like, I'm good. Like, I know what this is. I got to deal with it. And then we just kept urging him like, hey man, that therapy thing's really good. Like, I know you used to charge people for that, but like you should pay for that.
Uh-huh.
And he started to go. And he's a talker. And I think what I noticed with him is that when you're a talker and you have nobody on the other end, like a lot of things can change. Like everything can change. Like you're so used to this game of tennis and now you're just hitting it against the wall. And like you can get your workout in, but like the ball's not coming back with any topspin, you know, not any backspin, not any English on it. Like it's just get bored. And that's what you're worried about. Like in this tiny town we live in, this big house that he lives in, what are you doing all day?
Yeah.
And he always found ways to keep himself busy. But the nights were hard. And I remember asking him about that. And I'll give him a ton of credit. He never ran from it. And he knew it. That's where like his knowledge is a blessing and a curse. He's like, I'm not going to go buy a house in California and live in an apartment next to you guys. I'm not going to go move to Florida and go into like a retired community. He's like, I'm going to sit in it. I'm going to sit in it for a year. Come holler at me after that, basically. And the anniversary of 1 year, we all met in New York City. And I flew out there. We had an Oregon State game. I'll never forget it. And we go to this dinner spot and everybody bawls around the table. We go. And he's like, your mom basically said to me, like, grieve for a year. And they move on. And she was big on that. Like, Amy's listening. You got to grieve for a lifetime. You ain't moving up. I'm just kind of kidding, but not really. Because we're going to go within 10 minutes of each other anyway. We've already agreed upon
you're going to be holding hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And what was amazing about it is 2 weeks, almost to the day after the 1 year anniversary, he went into a grief yoga class. Grief yoga. My dad loves yoga. And he meets a woman who is also going through grief. They become friends. Now they have a relationship. And like at first, I remember like I heard it and I was like, what? And then I was like, is that like the Devo and me responding real fast? Like, is their reaction? Like, pause. This isn't about you.
Call me when you're sure.
Yeah. And it's amazing because he isn't constantly grieving her. He's constantly honoring her. But he had the courage to go through the darkest of nights over the course of that first year. And I'm sure he still has some. But to be able to come out and live his life.
Yeah.
He would said something to me that I don't know how you'll relate to this, or people may disagree and think I'm crude, but he's like, people keep saying, I'm really sorry she passed. And he's like, what the hell is this? Passed? Like, she died.
She died.
She died. Talk about it. you know, he taught me a rule in our household now. He's like, no ghosts. My mom would say that too. No ghosts. Call it out. Talk it out. Keep it moving. And I think with grief, we can easily, and I'm great at this. I'm cool. And you're dying inside. And until you hit the floor to your literal knees, you don't ask for help. Like, I would have loved to have asked you for help. Ashley did one of the greatest things anybody's ever done for me. And I didn't even know it until like a year later, because I didn't even open the mail. And Ashley bought a tree in remembrance of my mom. And there's a tradition in Israel, at least, and there's many traditions like this, but you honor somebody by planting a tree. And you did it.
I didn't actually know that, but yeah. I was like, I can't send flowers. I did not know what to do.
So that's funny that you didn't know. Years earlier, I did a little documentary. I called it What Does It Mean to Love? And I went to Israel and I went to where my mom grew up. And it was really cool. My mom told this beautiful story as a child. She's obsessed with flowers. And my kids are obsessed with flowers. And her and her mom would climb a big hill every morning in Haifa, which is a little beach coastal town, port town that she grew up in. And she'd climb the hill, but she'd climb the hill with a cup of ice. By the time she got to the top of the hill, the ice would turn into water. She'd pick poppies, plant them in, walk down with her mom, take them into the house. Poppies die within 24 hours. They do it every single day. So I went to Haifa and climbed the hill and found poppies and brought my cup of ice.
Wow.
And I just kind of honored this concept around life, death, her. And anyway, I say that of like when I was in Israel, we also went to the forest where all these trees are planted in honor of people who died. And I 100% thought to this day that you knew.
I had no idea. No, I was just searching for something to, I was thinking about repairing the world and like, what could I do that is like, that was the, yeah. Wow. I didn't know that, but that's.
And I was like such a, I mean, yeah, you're not going to judge me as like a bad friend, but like, I didn't even know.
No. Well,
didn't even know.
But I also wasn't like, hey, did you get that cool thing that I did for right. you? Like, I didn't get the thank you that I would. No. And that was the other thing too, is I, and Martha Thomas, who we had, Solomon Thomas's mom on, who we had on this podcast, I still think about her all the time. People don't know how to handle other people's grief. People don't know how to handle their own grief. Obviously, I think that's something that we really struggle with as a society, but people really struggle with what to say and do for people. And I am that same way. And like, you want to be there and honor, but you also don't want to be too much. You don't want to be too little. You want to be the, and that is one of the things. So I guess there's two last things that I want to ask you. And I know we're at time because you have to go pick up your kid, which I can't make you late to go pick up your son. But the last two things I want to ask you is, one, what advice would you have for people who do want to show up for friends who are grieving? And again, everybody deals with it differently and needs different things. So that's part of it. But what would you say, like either what helped you or as you've gone through this process and you're forever going to be grieving your mom on some level, you know, of course, and honoring her, I should say, is probably a better word. But as someone who's thought about this and been intentional about it, like what advice would you have for people who are trying to be there?
Yeah, it's a great question. Cause I thought I was always a great friend when somebody lost a parent.
Yeah.
We all do. But until you deal with it, like
you don't know. Yeah.
Like, and I think that's just a fact. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't know what it's like to have kids until you have a kid. You don't know what it's like. It's just a fact. So what can you do? And I believe this, I steal this from Chris Peterson, our friend, which is like, call, like don't text.
Yeah.
Like, just call. Hey, I love you. Thinking about you. Because you don't want to talk about it all the time. And sometimes you do want to talk about mm-hmm. it. And then the second thing is like when you're around, I'm like, don't be afraid to bring it up.
Yeah.
Like,
because their memory and those stories and being able to talk about it is something that is so important.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps them alive, you know, is being able to.
I think so. I really do. Like, and it's amazing to like when you talk about it, I think as a parent, who's lost a parent, it really helps like the next generation too.
Mm-hmm.
Like there'll be times where we'll be laying in bed and Zane will just be like, Dad, I miss Nana. How you doing? And I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Right. But like kids are intuitive, you know? And totally. I think like, you know, if you're repairing the world, like your job is to keep telling and talking about it. And you know, I think all parents probably embellish a little bit of the stories of how they were raised or who they were raised by. That's okay.
And how tough it was.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. Like, I really believe that, and you're the master at this, and like you built a whole show on telling stories. And it's important that we get to the heart of them. Like, the saddest thing to me would be if I learned about my mom at her Shiva through a mask in COVID, mm-hmm. or if I learned about my dad in the future. I did a documentary on my dad. Mm-hmm. I at least have a 90-minute podcast of my mom. Like, I have something. So whether it's you get Ashley to come interview your mom, whatever, like, do that thing.
And when I did the interview with my mom, it was so poignant to me. And I'm like, I'm always going to have this. And my kids are going to be able to watch it, and their kids are going to be able to watch it. And it's really powerful. So even, again, me listening to the one that you did with your mom, it was incredible. One of my favorite quotes from there. And then I'll ask you one last thing, and I'll let you go on with your Friday night. But your mom, I think I'm going to get this straight. She said that the child is the father of the man.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Basically, the son is father of the man.
The son is father of the man.
Yeah, but either way.
And to the point of what Zane, kids being intuitive and being able to teach you things, she said, and the answer to that was when you were talking about, why did you get into football? You never knew football and all this. And she said, because you loved it. Yeah. And so I wanted to know everything about it. Like, I learned all of these things because you guys were interested in them and that was your life and I wanted to know about it. And I just thought that was such a beautiful, I don't know. There were so many things that your mom said in there that I'm like, put that on a sign, put that on, like, this is, I was literally writing all of these things down because she was so thoughtful of how she viewed life. And she was so articulate in how she wanted to raise you guys. And it was just amazing to hear you ask her all of these questions. Like, it was beautiful. And I do think there is something special here. And I said it in the last episode of, if you still can go record a conversation, and it's hard, like, we do this for a living, and it took until a very long time before I got my mom to hand her a microphone and say, okay, let's do this, you know, and it took a couple bottles of wine on my end. And so, yeah, there's a lot of baggage and there's a lot of stuff and no one knows how it's going to turn out, but just record it, get her voice, get his voice, you don't have to go make a documentary, but do if you can.
Yeah.
But it's so special to have for all of those reasons. And I'm glad that Zane and Makai and their kids are going to be able to have that and listen back to it.
Yeah. The voice is really cool. Like, just hearing it.
Yes.
Like, I'll, like, listen to that conversation you reference a lot.
Do you?
Like,
because I also wouldn't be surprised if you didn't listen. I think there are some people that have a hard time going back and listening to it. So what is that like when you do listen to it?
It's what you'd imagine, probably.
Yeah.
Like, the first thought is like, I miss you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I put our kids to bed, especially like the baby, like, I have the same prayer that I say to them every night. And sometimes, like, when you're holding a little one, like, it's very intimate.
Yes.
Right. And as I'll hold them and I'll, you know, say this little spiel, oftentimes I'll say, like, God, mom, like, I wish you could see this guy.
Yeah.
And that still cuts me to this day. She held him once, you know, like, we went back, like, I was like, screw it, we're going, I don't care. Like, he'll be fine. We're making it happen. But that is the one, like, you do have regrets and then you have to flip it of, like, I would say that, and then my brother would say, like, I don't have kids. I don't have a partner. Like, at least she got to meet them. So I think you compete to, like, not hide your emotions, deal with them, and then really respect everybody else's, and then take them for what they're worth. You know, like, I'll never forget, I called her totally losing it one day. I was in San Sebastian, Spain, and Amy was there, and I didn't know, like, how to prepare anything. Like, I was like, how do I cook? How do I clean? How do I do it? Like, how do I, like, whatever. I was just, like, freaking out as, like, a parent, as, like, everything. I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And she goes, she just laughs. She goes, son. And she rarely says that. Son, your only job is to be present. That's it. And I remember being, like, in my tracks, like, okay, I can do that. Like, I could do that. Like, sure. That's it. That's all I got to do to, like, do this parenting thing. I just got to be present.
And you are, Yogi. You are. I've seen it. And you are. Like, you live it. And I think I am grateful on her behalf that she got to see you start this chapter of your life. Like, finding Amy, starting a family. And it was right at the end of her life. But I imagine being a mom, knowing the peace that brings you, that, like, you're good. You're good. And so that's the last thing that I do want to ask you is about Amy, your incredible wife. We've talked about her a couple times. She's not allowed. She's grieving you for the rest of her life if something happens. Your favorite thing about Amy, like, how has she changed your life? And what is your favorite thing about her on this Mother's Day?
Oh, I didn't think that's what you were going to ask. But I'll tell you what I thought.
Answer the first one. Answer what you thought I was going to ask.
I can remember so vividly it hasn't happened in a long time, but we would be in bed when my mom was sick. And I referenced this before, like, it feels like somebody's taking a lobster cracker or whatever, you know, those things, mm-hmm. to like your rib cage. And I can remember like leaning one way, like opposite of her, and just feeling like my chest was breaking. And she just like never stopped showing up. You know, like she lost her dad at 13 and then her stepdad in her early 20s. She's had a lot of things that could make her a pessimist. And the thing I love the most about her is that like she loves harder. Like she always does. And when it came to my mom, like I have this picture of them in Indonesia. We were getting married. She took her on like a spa day. My mom was like no frills or the same Levi jeans forever. And I remember, but she's still like a woman. Like she loved being pampered. Mm-hmm. And they're holding hands on this like dirt road in Indonesia. And I can remember just being like, wow, like Amy like really threw down for my mom. And then she showed up for me while she had a newborn, while we had a new house, while we both got furloughed, while we didn't know how we were going to figure anything out. And yeah, I'll just never forget that. Cause like, I don't think there's words you can say when you lose a parent. I think it's like what you did with me. Like you didn't say anything on the phone that day. Amy never said anything that I'm like, oh, that line.
Yeah.
But like, you just showed up.
Yeah.
And I think like everybody at like the rehab center in Pennsylvania would be like, yeah, Devo showed up. Sometimes I didn't like how she called me out, but she showed up. My brother would say like every play she showed up. Every time an audition, she called up. You know, I think daughters, especially firstborn, and moms have a unique relationship. But my mom, my sister would be like, yeah, it wasn't always pretty, but she showed up. And anyway, Amy does too.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And like, what's really cool about all this, my mom's parents, when the Holocaust ended, my mom's dad went and met a woman, got married, had a baby. And a couple months later, after the baby was born, the mom and baby both got murdered in this town called Kies, this little town in Poland, like the largest massacres per capita in the history of the Holocaust. Their stories are documented in the Holocaust museums. And he's angry. You can imagine what he's going through. And he got on a train and he sat next to his then wife, which ended up being my mom's mom. Mm. And I got on a plane that I was never supposed to be on. And I sat next to my wife and our kids' moms. Like to say that they're not interconnected, yeah. You're missing, right. In my eyes, you're missing the boat a little bit on that.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a beautiful.
It's just kind of cool. You
it
know?
Is like, cool. And you think of, I think that's when you talk about documenting people's stories and like all of the things and all of the decisions and all of the inflection points that had to happen in the universe for you to be sitting here, for Amy to be sitting there, for you guys to meet on a plane, for like any of it. If we actually ever step back and thought about, it's like, it's all a miracle. It's just all the things that happened, all the people who made all of these different decisions along the way. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I will just tell you my favorite thing about Amy, and I have a million favorite things about Amy. I think she's like, good job. hold on tight.
Yeah. Don't worry.
She lets you, I don't want to say lets you, she leans into and loves you being you. And everyone loves you. You are like larger than life. Everyone I meet is your best friend. Like, oh, you know, Yogi, I love him. And I don't think it's always easy for the partner of that, like really bright, shining light that I don't want to, and I'm saying this in a way that I mean this in the way that like, I love you to death. Like takes a lot of the attention in the room, not because you're seeking it, but because you just, yeah. That is who you are. And people just want to be near you. You're a magnet. And she is kind of like, sure, bro, like go ahead, do your thing. But she loves you. And I will never forget. And I have pictures of this. We were over at your house. We all came over for dinner the night after your book came out. And she just celebrated you in a way that was like so beautiful and so special. And she had this kind of like amazing thing. And you guys had sparklers. And it was just, I remember watching and being like, God, I'm so glad that Yogi found his person, and then it's Amy. And the last story that I will tell, that I hope we can cut this out if you don't want me to share this, but I still laugh all the time. To me, when you told me this story and now knowing about your mom, I'm like, that's a page out of your mom's book. You were telling me that you were walking, what you guys were taking a walk, and you were like talking about something, and what, man, when am I going to get my break? Yeah. And she says, what did she say?
Amy goes, you effing got it. You met me.
You fucking got your break. Yeah. You met me.
Yeah. You met me, dude. You're good. She told me that again like 2 days ago.
Good. Yeah. She should tell you that every day for the week, because it's true. And whatever happens professionally, whatever million more amazing stories that you tell in every, you know, place that you will go tell them, you met her and it changed everything. And I think about your mom and just knowing, again, the peace that it probably brings her, knowing that you've got Amy and you're good and you're a dad now and all of that. It's just, it's a beautiful thing. So, Amy, I love you. Thank you for being the break that he needed.
Amen. Cast the couch. Let's go.
And thank you for having this conversation with me. I know we jammed it in on a day that there were 8,000 things going on, and I've wanted to have this conversation with you for a long time. And I think the day before Mother's Day, first of all, for everybody who's listening to this, that Mother's Day is really hard for, my heart's with you. I love you. And I hope that you honor that mother in your life in whatever way that you can today. And I will also say, for everyone who still has their moms in their lives, reach out to the people who don't, because I think that's one of the hard things. And we have a good mutual friend who lost her mom when she was very young. And she said, this is like the worst day of the year for me, because you can't go anywhere without all of these, my mom, this mom, mothers. And she said, and it's just, as I've gotten older, it's gotten harder because that void is so much bigger. And I realize I'm just like never going to have that. And she said, people don't reach out anymore either. Like, people used to sometimes check in on me, and she goes, and I've gotten older, that just doesn't happen. So check in on the people, think of someone you know who might be struggling today, and don't text them, call them.
There it is. Hey, great.
I'm listening.
This show's awesome.
I'm listening. Thank you for being supportive of it.
For the future of it. Keep it moving.
All right. Go pick up your son. That does it for another edition of Your Mom. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
Your mom.
You got it.
Well, thank you very much, Mom. I'll give you a holler later on, and I'm going to close up this podcast. So thanks for coming on.
Okay, so you will contact me later. I'm going to call you on your regular phone.
You got it.
Don't worry.
I'll call you in a few.
I love you, honey. Thanks.
You
I'm
too.
Honored. I hope I taught you something minuscule, because you teach me more than you can ever dream of. Did you hear all that?
I did. Thank you very much. All right, Mom. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. I love you, honey. Thanks. Thanks a lot.